Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a Creepy Way.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about two movies. We don't have a name for November. Based on these movies, I was trying to figure out some sort of ovary reference, but it doesn't come out smoothly, and it seems a little bit patronizing, maybe.
That sounds like a bad idea.
Yeah. So there were two movies tonight, both of them on your list. The first is the movie Salt, 2010, with Angelina Jolie and Liev Schreiber. And then the next movie is Atomic Blonde, which I think is, what, 2017?
That sounds right.
Yeah. With Charlize Theron and John Goodman and James McAvoy, among others.
Toby Jones,
yes. So, Drew, this is on your list, and you wanted to pair them together. Introduce us to Salt. Salt first, I guess.
Yeah, so this really started after I saw Atomic Blonde when it came out. Just the vibe of that movie made me think of Salt, which I saw a long time ago when it first came out on video. You know, sort of both female-driven espionage action movies. So I thought it would be interesting to kind of compare and contrast one, which was I think meant to be like a pretty huge blockbuster, what, 8 years ago, versus one that came out last year that was, I think, a smaller movie, but definitely had a different tone to it. So yeah, they're both kind of in the same genre, probably not quite as similar as when we did this before with Dread and The Raid, but close enough. I thought that it might be interesting to pair them up.
Yeah, well, and also they're both comparable to Dread and The Raid.
Yeah.
So Salt, what was your first impression of Salt? I had not seen it until this last week.
Oh, interesting. My impression of it was that it was a pretty good action movie, with, you know, lots of A-list stars in it. That was pretty twisty. That was my memory. And then watching it in a John Wick world makes it seem really kind of light and silly nowadays. But that is not how I remember reacting to it when I first saw it.
Well, I mean, this was directed by Philip Noyce, who we know from, let me see here.
I think we've done a ton of his movies.
I think we have, yeah. Let's see. We haven't talked about The Quiet American, right? And we haven't talked about The Bone Collector, but we have talked about The Saint, the Val Kilmer Saint from 97, and Clear and Present Danger from 94, and also Patriot Games from 92, and then the movie we will eventually talk about, Dead Calm, in 89. And let's see, also, it was the Bone Collector, Sliver.
We have mentioned Sliver, we have mentioned Bone Collector, and we have even mentioned Blind Fury.
Blind Fury, yes, absolutely. Yep. Yeah, no, he's a... And actually, it's funny, this movie to me, it actually makes sense that it's in... I mean, it's, 15 years later, but in the same kind of universe as Clear and Present Danger and The Saint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they all feel like this the same kind of movie.
Yeah.
He also directed a movie called Rabbit Proof Fence.
Yes.
Have you seen it?
I have not.
That was a good movie. Really different than anything else we're talking about here.
Yeah,
and kind of hard to watch. But
say, in 1931, three Aboriginal girls escape after being plucked from their homes to be trained as domestic staff and sent off on a journey across the outback, starring Jason Clark and Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah, I'll give you a hint. They're the bad guys.
Yeah, I could probably guess that. Yeah, yeah, it does sound kind of like a downer movie, and then The Quiet American. Where it's an older British reporter vies with a young U.S. doctor for the affections of a beautiful Vietnamese woman, starring Michael Caine, Brendan Fraser, and Ti Hai Yen Do.
I've never seen it.
Yeah, me either. Okay, so I actually kind of like Salt. I thought it was interesting. Now, I was happy that it turns out, in hindsight, I'm very happy I watched Salt before I watched Atomic Blonde. Because I hadn't seen Atomic Blonde until this week either.
Oh, really?
Well, I had your mom had recorded it, like she paid for it, recorded it on her DVR, but it was it would skip and pixelate and stuff like every minute and a half.
Oh,
so I finally said, we got to pull the plug. I can't watch this. But I mean, watching it like last night was great. Okay, so back to Salt, though. We got people we love in it. It's got Angelina Jolie. And we got Liev Schreiber.
Yep.
And then, of course, we have Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Yeah, he's always good.
Yes.
Nice job with his name, too.
Yeah, I don't know if I did a good job or not, but well. We also have Andre Brouwer, and I don't even remember him being in it, but he's in the
cast. Oh, he was, I think he was one of the guys in the bunker. He had like one line.
Yeah, Secretary of Defense. And then we've got, I mean, some of the main actors are people that I've never heard of before, like August Diehl, who played the boyfriend Mike, or husband Mike, and then Daniel Obruchinsky, who is a Polish actor and director who's been in a ton of stuff, just not English language stuff for the most part.
He was so weird because he looked like he should almost be familiar.
Yes.
Also had a small part by Corey Stoll.
And what do we know Corey Stoll from?
House of Cards.
Okay. So let's go ahead and get right into the synopsis to ruin the movie, but not, I mean, I think this movie, well, actually both movies that we're both going to probably ruin all the surprises in. I mean, I recommend you guys, everybody listening should probably see both movies. We're going to talk about the endings, but because both movies are ostensibly like political thrillers, but especially Atomic Blonde, but also in Salt, there's a lot of action stuff. And like set pieces that are really worth watching. Just the experience of them are good. So what we have is Evelyn Salt, Angelina Jolie, in 2003 is tortured by North Korean soldiers who accuse her of espionage. She is traded for a North Korean prisoner and escorted to safety by her boss, Ted Winter, Liev Schreiber. And while walking toward the border, she asks why she was set free. And it was explained that her boyfriend, Mike, who is in like an arachnologist, some sort of German guy, right?
Yeah. Is that a real word, arachnologist?
That's what it says in the synopsis here. Something. I don't know. He's a biologist whose main focus is arachnids.
Yeah.
Anyway, he is in love with her and will go to the ends of the earth to save her. So he petitions his government because she has been captured by the North Koreans while they were on a hunt for spiders. Because he apparently, according to his profession, allows him access to places like North Korea just because he studies the spiders in the area.
Yeah, what was the Bond movie that started off with him being tortured by North Koreans?
Oh, the Pierce Brosnan movie.
Because it was almost the same opening.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, and both of these movies, both Atomic Blonde and Salt, have a lot of bloodied female heroines. See a lot of bruising and blood in these movies.
Yeah, more so in Atomic Blonde. Yeah,
definitely more so in Atomic Blonde, for sure. But in a weird way, Atomic Blonde is the more cartoony and yet the much more serious movie than this.
Yes.
Because this is a Clear and Present Danger kind of movie. I mean, she's basically Jack Ryan.
She's somewhere between Jack Ryan and Jason Bourne.
Kind of. Well, and you may have, actually, it's in an odd way, you may have to actually explain this to me, because to cut to the very essence of this movie, the plot, she's a CIA operative, so she has to explain it to her husband. And they eventually get married years later, blah, 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 working with the CIA, still with her boss as Mr. Winter. They're leaving at the, like, on a Friday or at the end of a workday for a weekend or something. And just mm-hmm. before they leave, they are summoned back in the office because there's this guy who's come in to defect. So they go up to run this guy who is our Polish actor friend. And he is defecting, and the secrets he's willing to trade is that there's this secret kind of almost like a David Morrell type conspiracy where children from the Soviet Union were placed in American homes or in America as kind of like a sleeper cell mm-hmm. to awaken and destroy the West. Now, in your understanding of this movie, well, okay, sorry, I'll skip to the point that starts off this movie on the wild chase. Again, like a good David Merrill novel, or a Robert Ludlum novel, actually, where
yep.
it's like, oh, okay, but here's the trick. It's not just a bunch of sleeper cells of Russians, which may or may not be this, because they were referring to this program that was like in legend only.
Right.
Well, he's telling it outright that Salt herself is one of these children. And she's going to assassinate the Russian president who is coming to the United States to attend the funeral of the American vice president. So she is taken aback that somebody's accusing her of being a double agent, part of a cell.
Mm-hmm. And it's set up to make it look like she's falsely accused and on the run because her husband has disappeared.
Yes.
So the initial reading of the movie is that she does not want to be detained while everything gets figured out because she wants to go rescue her husband.
Because she knows that if an agent is burned, the whole family is going to get burned. And that right. puts her husband in mortal danger. Also, ostensibly, he has been falsely accused, has no idea what this guy is talking about.
Right.
Kind of. Now, skipping to the end, and I see in flashbacks, we kind of see memories coming up. Are these memories she's having for the first time? Or is she does she know she's been, like, the Manchurian candidate? I mean, is she the Manchurian candidate, or is she really part of a sleeper cell?
No, she's a straight-up Russian spy.
Okay, so from the whole beginning, she knows. Like, basically, the jig is up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, so now she has to... She is being chased by the Americans. So her boss, the boss she admires and works with and who likes her, Liev Schreiber, and also the pesky, I guess the version of internal affairs or something. That's where Mr. Edgefor comes in. His character and his partner are the, oh no, we have to lock her down. Like right now, this is a serious thing. We need to whisk her out of here. She's really a mole. We need to lock her down right now. And her boss is like, no, hold on. This can't be true. Just hold on. Let's just figure this all out. A nice bit of misdirection there as well.
Right.
So she manages to escape. And then there is action scene upon action scene upon action scene. Very, very 1990s, late 90s action scenes for a 2003 movie,
2010, I think. Yeah.
So it does seem very quaint, actually, the action scenes.
Yeah, they're pretty light.
Yeah.
But fun.
Yeah, they're fun. And, I mean, she does some of her own stunts, and she actually has some training, you know, and so it looks good. I mean, all the action scenes mm-hmm. look good. Yeah. They're just very... Now they appear to be sort of Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah, it's very bright and slick. And, I think the description of placing it in the same universe as, like, The Saint in Clear and Present Danger, is really an apt description.
Because there's twists and turns, but there's no gritty underbelly in this movie. I think you're right. It's bright. It's very bright and out in the open.
Mm-hmm. It actually very like Pierce Brosnan-y James Bond movie, yeah. Too.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And the stakes are high, like a James Bond movie. So that's mm-hmm. always fun because, you know, she's assuming she's going to assassinate the Russian president and cause all sorts of international problems and reopening the Cold War or whatever. I guess we can yada yada a lot of it. I mean, really.
Well, the first twist is that she actually is a Russian agent and she really does assassinate the president, the Russian president, except that she doesn't.
Yes. And we can't, I mean, that was no surprise to me. We kind of knew that was happening, right?
Right.
I mean, as soon as there were spiders involved.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the fact that she stole some spider venom already. That was, we knew that was going to come up.
Yeah, that was nice. I've never seen James Bond or Jack Ryan milk a spider.
No, that's true. Exactly. Yeah. And and there's some, you know, she's always being she's actually being captured all the time. She's escaping right away.
Mm-hmm.
So and we have like get some decent car chases and stuff. And then the next twist becomes even sort of hairier. Is that so? After this whole Russian president thing, then we discover that okay, so the guy, the defector that said that she was an agent, he also escaped and killed some CIA agents on his way out.
Yeah, the CIA in this movie is really incompetent.
Yes, so she tracks him down and kills all of his band of. The K-12 group that's going to do this like onslaught of America, blah blah blah.
Yeah, they kill her husband in front of her.
Yes,
and it turns out she actually really loved her husband, so this was a deal breaker for her.
Yes, and now it's a revenge movie.
Mm-hmm.
So she's getting revenge, not to clear her name, because as you said, she's a Russian spy.
Yes,
yeah, she's just straight up getting revenge on people that have wronged her.
Yeah. Now she's pissed.
Yeah. And then we have so now how do the nuclear codes come in, or what is that process? Or I've already forgotten that element of the plot.
Yeah, so the second part of the I guess it was a Russian plan, rogue elements within the Russian government. They were gonna kill the Russian president to ratchet up tensions. And then they were going to steal the nuclear codes to start a nuclear war.
So now we have the Brother Anderson, real life scenario we've talked about as far as a preemptive nuclear strike.
Right.
Considered by the Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now we have the final battle comes in when the president has to go to the bunker, the war room or whatever.
Yeah, it's a very Homeland season one kind of plot.
I haven't seen Homeland.
Oh, never mind.
Okay. I think it's actually a 24 every season plot, right?
Sort of, yeah. I mean, they have a scheme to sort of create a false attempt on the president's life to get him down into the bunker, which is where they really want him so that they can go through with the rest of their plan to get him to arm the nuclear weapons and be prepared to fire.
Yes.
And then when we get the final twist.
Yeah. The final twist is that Liev Schreiber is also a Russian spy. So, he's going to be launching the missiles for real, using the president in whatever way he has to.
Yes.
And then there has to be a final battle between Salt and Schreiber. Or Winter, I guess. I don't know. Yada, yada, yada. Let's see. Hold on just a second here, because now I realize I don't even remember how this movie exactly ends.
They capture Salt, but okay. The IGF-4 character realizes that she's not guilty of what she's being accused of. They kind of gloss over the fact that she's been a Russian spy for decades.
Yeah, she's definitely guilty of stuff.
Yeah. So he lets her go so that she can go get more bad guys, hunt down the rest of the Russian moles. That's how the movie ends.
Preparing us for Salt 2, which was most definitely going to happen.
I'm surprised it didn't. I thought this movie made some money.
I think so. Let me find out, actually, if it...
I see a cumulative worldwide gross of almost $294 million.
Okay.
Based on a budget of $110 million.
Yeah, so this was a hit movie. So the question is, why was there no Salt 2? Well, I think... And the first cut of the movie actually had a different ending too.
Oh, did she die? It was originally written for a guy, right?
Yes, it was originally written for basically a guy, and Tom Cruise. They approached him to play Salt, and when he said when he bailed on it, they're like, "Okay, well, you're going to rewrite it for a lady now." Oh, well, here's another actually piece of trivia that you might find interesting. Liev Schreiber was a guest on The Daily Show, and during an interview with Jon Stewart, Jon Stewart referred to a hot Russian spy, which Schreiber replied, "Are you talking about me or Angelina?" And then he's like, "Oh, wait, hold on. I mean, she's the hot Russian spy. I'm the good guy. I'm her boss. Sorry. Woo." So I think he did what we call now a Ruffalo.
Yes, I was just gonna mention that.
And yeah, so that's kind of fun. Yeah, actually, it was originally written as the Salt was Edwin A. Salt, and Tom Cruise was approached. Anyway, so I think it is a perfectly serviceable movie, like a summer action adventure movie. Fine.
Yeah, there's nothing to get mad at in this movie. I mean, Angelina Jolie does a good job. She's fun to watch in this movie. Everybody's kind of doing, you know, their own level of scenery chewing in every movie or in every scene. There's a lot of unnecessary Southern accents, but it's fine. It's all fine.
Her German boyfriend, I don't understand. Like I thought, do I know him from someplace else? Like, why does he get all the screen time and I've never seen him before or since?
Well, yeah, because he's the only motivation for her to actually be the protagonist.
Yeah, I guess. Okay, so we're sort of whipping through Salt right away. What are your thoughts? Are you, we already talked about it. I mean, is it worth it?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of feels like the end of an era, almost, with this type of movie. I think everything to follow is, like, the gritty version of this type of movie nowadays.
Well, and you'd refer to this, we now live in a post-John Wick world.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually never seen either John Wick movie.
You should invest some time.
Okay.
And definitely the first one.
Oh, really? See, so for some reason, I thought number two was even better, I had heard, but I don't know.
Well, see, it's hard now, because one of the great joys of John Wick is having such low expectations.
Okay.
Those were the circumstances under which I watched it. This weird Keanu Reeves movie came out about getting revenge for some bad guys that killed his dog. And just thinking it's that type of movie and then experiencing what happens was completely bananas. So now with a sequel and it sort of being, part of pop culture now, I don't know that it would have the same effect.
Okay. So I will rush to watch it without hearing anything more about it. How about that?
Didn't one of the directors of John Wick direct Atomic Blonde?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. That actually makes a lot of sense.
David Leitch. Leitch, yeah. He directed John Wick, uncredited. He directed Atomic Blonde, Deadpool 2. I haven't seen any Deadpool movie either.
Can I spoil a little bit of Deadpool 2?
Yeah.
In the very beginning of Deadpool 2, something extremely tragic happens.
Okay.
To Deadpool. And I mean, you know the conceit of the Deadpool movies, right?
No, not really. I mean, he was horribly burned or something, or...
Well, he, it's sort of half satire. He breaks the fourth wall, the character, so the character speaks directly to the audience.
Okay.
And makes fun of what's going on, like, in a completely, like, metatextual way. So he will comment like on about other superhero movies. During the movie, he'll complain that they have to get these lame X-Men characters because the budget was too small to have get Hugh Jackman.
Okay, that's funny.
I don't know. You can't really call it tongue in cheek, but it's overtly aware of its humor. And even though like the rest of the characters play it pretty straight. So in the beginning of Deadpool 2, something tragic happens. So when they roll through the credits, it's like it's sort of a satire of like an old school James Bond style credit scene. But Deadpool's pissed about what happened. So all of the credits are like, it's not going to be as funny because I don't remember the actual ones, but like written by, why would you do that? You know, like those types of credits. And it got to the director and it said directed by one of the guys that killed John Wick's dog, which I thought was kind of funny until I saw that it actually was one of the directors from John Wick.
Oh, that's funny. So Atomic Blonde. Atomic Blonde is so this was a graphic novel, right? Based on a graphic novel, I think.
I guess.
It certainly feels like a graphic novel. Also, before we even talk about the plot, the movie takes place in, 1989 Berlin.
Yes.
Right at the collapse of the Berlin Wall. Now, I have to confess, I love the music in this movie.
The music's great.
Yeah. Turns out it's all wrong, but it's great. Now, it was explained that it was all wrong in the trivia as far as because none of the songs, or I think only one of the songs, actually is post-1983. And Berlin was a very, very hip city in 89. And actually, I don't know, maybe even still today. Probably because Berlin wanted it. West Berlin wanted Berlin to be a hip city full of art and young people and music and stuff. And so they gave like tax breaks and all sorts of things that they did to support the arts. Which is why we had a lot of German art back then. And maybe still today. But the songs that would have been popular didn't have the iconic 80s sound that works so well in this movie. The argument is, okay, if you went to a disco in Berlin in 1989, you wouldn't hear the politics of dancing unless they were doing a retro night. But in the context of this movie, that's a perfect song for the whole thing.
Yeah, I don't care.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
You cannot make me care that the movie that the music is slightly anachronistic.
Exactly. Yeah, and let me again before we even talk about the plot, let me just talk about some of the songs. There's two versions of 99 Luftballons. We'll be right back. There's Voices Carry. There's London Calling. There's I Ran So Far Away, a Flock of Seagulls. The Politics of Dancing. It's got Der Kommissar. Check it out, Joe. George Michael's father figure.
That is a great use of father figure, by the way.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Not the David Bowie version of Major Tom, right?
It's not Space Oddity. It's the Major Tom, like, part two. Standing there alone, the ship is waiting, all systems are go. Are you sure? Control is not convinced, but the computer has the evidence. No need to abort. The countdown starts. Watching in a trance, the crew is certain, nothing left to chance. All is working, trying to relax. Up in the capsule, sent me up a drink. Jokes, Major Tom. The count goes on. 4, 3, 2, 1.
Yeah.
Which is great, by the way. It's a good song. Yeah. It's also got David Bowie's Cat People, which I don't actually had never heard before, or I didn't realize, you know, didn't, I mean, it sounded, it was a David Bowie song. But I think my favorite song in it, although it made me scratch my head a little bit, was Stigmata, which is a Ministry song that I go right back to the movie Hardware, because it featured prominently in Hardware. It's kind of weird in the movie Hardware, too, because you actually see a video when they play Stigmata. But the video is not of Ministry. The video is of Gore. So it's, right. Yeah, it's kind of funky. But the version of Stigmata they had, I realized, hold on, there's none of the industrial sounds. Like, in the real Stigmata thing, there's, like, metal grinders and drills and things that are happening that's, like, part of the music.
Yeah.
Like when I turn on Stigmata in my car, and a strange mood I would be in to turn that thing on, but I would turn on loud, and I expect to hear like the winding of like a grinder on metal, and I want to hear like drill sounds and stuff. And this had everything but that. It had the drums, it had the whatever, but it's also a version that was done by Marilyn Manson.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just a strange thing. Anyway, they also had Fight the Power by Public Enemy. They had Behind the Wheel by Depeche Mode. And then, of course, the end credits are Under Pressure, mm-hmm. which, you know, maybe because Bohemian Rhapsody is out or maybe because Bowie died really recently. I'm always impressed about how good Under Pressure is as a song.
Yeah, no, it doesn't matter the context. That is an all-timer,
yeah.
That song.
Yeah, and it could be so, like I could see where people wouldn't like it.
No.
But it's great.
I disagree.
Yeah. Okay, so back to Atomic Blonde. Well, what did you think, I guess, originally and this time watching Atomic Blonde?
The first time I saw it, I knew nothing about it, except that it was a Charlize Theron-led espionage movie. And I thought, well, that sounds right up my alley. So I watched it, and my initial thoughts were, holy shit.
Yeah.
And there were several of those throughout the movie.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this movie. I like this movie quite a bit. It was really fun to watch it again. Probably even more rewarding because the plot is a bit of a head scratcher. So knowing a little bit more about what's going on, I think you're able to kind of relax and enjoy the set pieces even more.
Yeah, because isn't the plot kind of cheating?
Yeah. I mean, the very end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be my only complaint is I don't think they needed the final scene.
The final scene or even... Well, I don't know. I guess we'll get to the plot when we get to the plot. But yeah, there's some twists in this movie, let's say. Mm-hmm. And we're going to ruin it for you anyway. So watch Atomic Blonde if you want to see it without all the twists ruined. Although, again, I don't think... Like, I'm going to watch it again, I'm sure, relatively soon, knowing all of the plot twists, just because the action pieces are so amazing. I mean, it really is like a Raid-type movie.
Yeah, and on second watch, I really appreciated like what James McAvoy was doing a lot more.
As far as
his performance,
oh,
yeah. His choices, that whole character, you know, start to end, it's not like Benicio del Toro Usual Suspects level, but it is really bizarre. I mean, it works.
Yeah.
It works. It's really entertaining, but...
Well, you know, he tried to do more, right?
No.
Yeah, the one of the
they had to dial him back?
Yeah, the one of the things he said about it, and I really appreciate James McAvoy. I want to watch Split again, actually. I haven't seen it. Unless that's Brad Dourif. He was told that, like, during that time, like, a spy in Berlin would be somebody who was, you know, kind of a druggie, kind of alcoholic, kind of probably gay, because they're used to living double lives anyway. Like, they have to hold their shit together, hiding, like, big secrets. But he was told he couldn't be gay because of the element of Charlize Theron's character being kind of fluid in her. I guess not fluid is not the right term, but she was at least bisexual, depending on your viewing of this movie. So, like, nope, too much, too gay. And in fact, I think the all of the, like, lesbian scenes in this movie were cut out to for, like, Arab countries, who are apparently okay with everything else.
Sure.
But I was surprised about, okay, so this is not the light movie that Salt was. Bright. This was not a bright, this is more of a movie in darkness and bruises. You never get to see, or rarely do you see Charlize Theron not just covered in bruises or openly bleeding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, well, it starts off with her nude in the ice bath.
Yes.
Just looking like she's had the hell beat out of her.
Yeah, it is the most non-erotic nude scenes ever. Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe just because I'm not into that sort of thing, so I guess I don't want to yuck anybody's yums, but I was just impressed about how physical her character was.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was happy to see Toby Jones and John Goodman, because they're always good, but you're not going to get a lot of action scenes out of them.
That would have been boss, though. If the two of them just started throwing down at some point.
Oh, yes. But, I mean, we have Eddie Marsan and Sophia Boutella and James McAvoy, and they are every bit as badass as Charlize Theron's character. Well, okay. Not quite every bit, necessarily. But everybody's giving it their all during fight scenes, for sure.
Yeah.
And all the fight scenes go on for longer than you would expect.
Yeah, and especially at the end, they go on so long that both the people fighting are exhausted.
Yeah, exactly. Especially, yeah, when they're making that crossing from east to west.
Mm-hmm.
That the scene in that, like an apartment house or something,
mm-hmm.
is amazing. And again, it's sort of a raid scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you know there was a Skarsgård in this movie?
Yeah, like Bill or somebody?
Mm-hmm.
Who does he play? He's one of the...
he's like the passport guy.
Oh, yeah.
He's the East German fixer dude.
Yeah, who's also the... he plays the... Hold on. I should look it up here. I guess he pretends to be an ambassador at one point. Is that how they get across, or...
Yeah, that's how he gets her across after she failed to get the package through.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Have you seen the new It?
No, I have not. Is that the same guy?
Yeah.
Okay. I want to, but I have mixed feelings about It. Partly because I want to see because I have the original miniseries. I have not read the book. It's a daunting read, so I don't want to. I can't commit myself to like 60 hours of an audiobook or 1,300 pages of reading. But I want to see the original, and then I kind of want to wait until the second part of It comes out, because apparently they broke it up into two stories, one with the kids and one with the adults, where the original miniseries they go back and forth.
I know nothing about It.
Well, you know about the objectionable Stephen King ending part of it, right?
No.
Oh.
Yeah, all guys. I know is there's a creepy clown. That's the extent of my knowledge of It.
Okay. Yeah. You know what? I won't destroy it for you.
No, you can. It's not a property I'm likely to go seek out.
Well, I mean, like every Stephen King story, I mean, it starts out with some kids. It's sort of a Stand By Me kind of a bunch of kids, some of which have really rough home lives. And they all come back as adults, including Harry Anderson is one of the I can't remember who else is in the movie, but remember Harry Anderson plays one of the grown-ups, where they all come back and kind of talk about the shit that happened. And we have Pennywise the Clown, who is the manifestation of the boogeyman or whatever, a force of evil. But in the book, in the novel, I am told that it's like mostly boys, but one girl, and the kids determine that in order for them to somehow beat Pennywise, they all have to lose their virginity. And so there's the kid gangbang scene at the end. Which even Stephen King is like, it was a different time. So.
Yikes.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I don't know how this, I haven't read the book either, so I don't know exactly how deftly this is handled, but still, it seems like a strange thing. So the question is always, oh, so what about the children gangbang scene at the end? Is that in that movie? Apparently not. No.
Yeah.
But because she's being molested by her family members, she's already, she basically is going to take one for the team.
Oh, she's already been abused, so she's DTF.
Yeah. Well, no, she's just used to the abuse. I don't know necessarily. Anyway, again, I don't want to make excuses for something I've read. Although I do want to give Mr. King a benefit of the doubt. But again, sometimes...
I don't know that he's earned it. The few Stephen King stories I've read tend to have the similar structure where there's a really interesting premise and a pretty cool middle. And then the ending is just shit.
Yeah, that is the problem. Partly because, now, I would disagree with the novels. Although there is some, like, Deus Ex Machina endings for sure in Stephen King novels. Mm-hmm. But the characters are so rich. Like, The Stand, that was a great book. I mean, it's been goofy in, like, the miniseries. To rewatch the miniseries, which I was very excited to see, and it has an all-star cast of the time. It doesn't actually hold up very well. The concepts are a little cartoony, and because you don't have, you know, 1,000 pages to get into every single backstory of everything, they had to make choices, and sometimes that shorthand does not lend itself to identifying with characters, and you end up with just, like, the basic elements of M-O-O-N, that spells friend.
Yeah, but that book in particular... is a perfect example. Like, really rich characters, really interesting structure, and then it just completely falls apart at the end. Like, oh, really? Hand of God? Fuck you. I read 1,000 pages for Hand of God. You fucking suck.
But let me tell you, the first couple chapters of The Stand is fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Just the setup. Forget all the characters. Just the initial setup is a brilliant concept, which is why, you know, the Stephen King short stories are always my favorite, because he's so good at giving you that little twist that, you know, you don't have the indulgence of hundreds of pages. You've got a nice little character setup, and then boom. And granted, everything he's ever done, like, he has done, like, a pastiche of every author he has admired. He's got an Arthur Conan Doyle story. He's got an H.P. Lovecraft story. He's got an Edgar Allan Poe story. You know, he tells all of the genre. He's got a Charles Dickens story. But it's all done really well. I mean, he's got a deft hand. He's no David Morrell, but he's pretty good. Anyway, I love those books, too. Although I haven't seen... There's two books in particular where he had, like, an Urban Explorer series? Where these people, like, go and do urban explorers, like they break into abandoned buildings in Detroit, that kind of thing. And they find, you know, hidden secrets and blah, blah, blah. I think one of them was called Creepers.
Well, haven't read it.
Anyway, I figure at some point John Rambo will show up in one of those buildings and the story really starts to cook. So, okay, so back to Atomic Blonde.
Yeah.
I mean, really, so it's based on the 2012 graphic novel called The Coldest City, which revolves around a spy who has to find a list of double agents who are being smuggled into the West on the eve of the collapse of the Berlin Wall. By the way, this is, of course, the plot of every James Bond movie ever. Like, the constant plot of the list of spies, I think, is hysterical.
And Mission Impossible, right?
Yeah.
The Knock List.
Yeah.
This is the Knock List.
This is every spy thing has a list of spies. It's like, come on. But anyway, yeah. So we have this list of spies. And we know that the list of spies includes Satchel, who is a double agent.
All right.
And because the movie starts out with her being debriefed after what happened in Berlin, and she's all beat to hell, she's being interviewed, and she's being interviewed in a way that you know, because we are told that everything went wrong,
mm-hmm.
and she's a little bit bitter. So as the story gets unfolds, she's sent to Berlin to find this list. And her contact in Berlin is James McAvoy, who is Percy, who is like the section chief or something.
Yes.
But he's like, he's sort of a rough character, as we said before. He's
gone native.
He's totally gone native. Like, he's selling Jordache jeans and all sorts of other black market goods. And he's sort of playing both ends against the middle. So he is an obvious choice for being Satchel.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see some of the East German guys, and then we see the French agent, the new, young, inexperienced French agent, Sophia Boutella. Oh, and so Gascoigne, John, what was his name? James Gascoigne is shot and killed by a KGB agent, and that's James Gascoigne had the list, and that's how the KGB agent got the list, and now the list is being... they're expecting it to show up for sale. And This, the Berlin Wall sort of collapsing is coming, but nobody know. I mean, you know, nobody knew the wall was going to actually fall right then. So there'd been rumblings and stuff, but you know, East Germany, West Germany was still a dangerous place and full of spies. And I love that what must be real. The fact that you could climb up a little set of stairs and look over the wall at the East Germans,
mm-hmm.
you know, as a tourist thing. So, oh, and by the way, Atomic Blonde 2 is in development.
Is it really?
Yep. Faux show.
I hope it's directed by the same dude.
I think so. Yeah. But anyway, right away, it's like a shoot 'em up action movie, but really dark because the it's not a clean, bloodless, sort of Pierce Brosnan, James Bond, or who knows, every James Bond movie, really. You know, a couple of karate chops and some clever gunplay, and the scene is over. Oh, no.
Yeah, no, not this movie.
No, everybody is bloody and bruised. So we have this flashbacks between the debriefing room and the actual Lorraine... let's see. What is Lorraine's name? Lorraine
Broughton.
Yes. She's an MI6 agent. So she is the James Bond character, kind of. And she's really good at her job. And, like all of the agents, all the spies in this movie don't have time for this shit. Like, they all have a game to play. Although, Percy's game, he is actually obviously working all sorts of angles. So... she doesn't trust him, but she's smart. So they need to actually do a couple things. They need to find the list, but they also need to come up with a contact who, I guess, had the list. This is our Spyglass character, and he had memorized the list, so he's valuable for his brain.
Yeah, so he's the one that came up that smuggled the list out, but yeah. He also memorized it, so when the list went missing... he was the list.
Yes. And he's in East Berlin needing to get to West Berlin.
Right.
And freedom. but they have to smuggle him out. And they're going to use this these demonstration marches that are happening to try to do it, like send him over in plain sight. Again, these simple plans do not go over well. This actually reminded me a little bit, like, the flashy, less bloody version of this was the Man from U.N.C.L.E., Army Hammer movie.
Yeah, I actually got, I think during Percival's, McAvoy's first escape, when the police raided,
yes,
whatever he was doing.
Yeah.
I definitely got man from U.N.C.L.E. vibes from that.
So now we have this cat and mouse game where, Percival is somehow working with the Russians to basically kill Spyglass, but he's ostensibly also trying to help Broughton get Spyglass over, and he actually ends up with the list because he kills the Russian that had the list.
Mm-hmm.
But what he's going to do with the list then becomes a question, and we've already seen him talk to other people about trying to keep the balance of power. Like, his idea, at least as we're told, is that he can use the list not to give it to any particular side, but to kind of keep everybody on the same level and therefore not upset this whole thing they've got working.
Yeah, he loves the spy game so much, he just wants it to keep going.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And he believes that everybody involved in the spy game knows what's really happening, and everybody who doesn't know about the spy game or their bosses are just getting in the way.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, they can make this thing last for a long time if they just keep up all this stuff. You know, acceptable losses on both sides, that kind of thing. Although he never sits down and explains it like that. But anyway, we have all this list and all this satchel stuff, and the French agent, LaSalle, who ends up with a romantic relationship with Bowden. And we have these audio recordings that she's actually... turns out she's taping all this stuff, Bowden is. And so she ends up, like, making her own, like, edited audio of these conversations. Broughton? Yeah.
Broughton,
and what I call her.
Bowden.
Oh, Broughton. Yeah. Sorry. Lorraine. Yeah. You know, the Atomic Blonde.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there is intrigue abound in this movie.
Yeah, everybody's a spy, so everybody's got spy stuff happening.
Yeah. Nobody trusts anybody. Everybody's got their own agenda. Everybody's working four or five different angles.
Yeah. Ostensibly for their own ends, if not necessarily for the ends they're supposed to be working for, as it turns out.
Right.
Because at the end, what do we really know? Like, at the end, again, what we have is we have Percy, who's MI6's man in Berlin. We've got Broughton, who is MI6's person that goes in to actually do the thing and realizes that, okay, so Percy set her up in all sorts of different ways, so he may be, if not actually Satchel, definitely a bad guy. But probably Satchel. Except that let's see. So Percival, though, he actually insinuates that she is Satchel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we learn that she probably is Satchel, right?
She is Satchel. Yeah.
So she is Satchel, although she pins Satchel on him, mm-hmm. and her French girlfriend gets killed in the whole thing, and she may actually know that. The French girlfriend may actually know that Broughton is Satchel too, right?
Unclear.
But she's a little more competent than she's treated, right?
Yeah, because the French agent was working with Percy.
Yes, okay.
So it's never made clear how much she knew about Satchel. Yeah. Probably didn't know as much as Percy did, but... And Satchel turns out not to be a double agent. Turns out to be a, what, triple agent?
A something. Well, that's the thing, is that, so this movie tells you that, okay, so we have Broughton, our Atomic Blonde, is a good guy. And then we have a twist that, okay, maybe she's Satchel, so she's a bad guy. She's working for the Russians. Mm-hmm. And we have, of course, get to a point where when Percy starts packing up his stuff and burning down the warehouse and trying to get away because shit is falling apart, including the Berlin Wall is falling, he actually gets killed for his trouble. He kills the French person, and then Broughton kills him, pins being Satchel on him, which he says is very clever.
Yes. I loved McAvoy's final scene. He was so great.
McAvoy's good in this movie. He's mm-hmm. he's a good actor. What else has he been in besides Split and this movie?
He was Professor X.
Oh, okay. All those movies I haven't seen.
He was in Wanted with Angelina Jolie.
Okay, a movie I watched a little bit of and decided, nope, not going to do it.
Yeah, that's fair. He was in Atonement for, you know, serious acting.
Ah, maybe I read the book on Atonement. That was like twisty and disturbing. Mm-hmm. Hey, what do you know? He had a cameo in Deadpool 2.
Oh, yeah, because Professor X.
Yeah. Oh, and so, hold on. He's in It Chapter 2. He plays one of the adults. Because It Chapter 1 was just the kids. Okay, so we end up with, and again, this is a twisty-turny, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I'm really blah, blah, blahing a ton of really enjoyable action scenes. I mean, in some cases, a little bit hard to watch in places.
Yes.
But they're so good, you're captivated. Like I was. Mm-hmm. I found them really interesting. It wasn't like a 70s Chuck Norris movie action scene. It was much more like the Raid action scenes. Again, a John Wick world, right? So we have, now we realize that, okay, so she's probably pinned the Satchel thing on Percy, but now she's really Satchel, so she goes back to her KGB handlers or whatever. But it turns out they're going to kill her, so she kills them. And then she ends up getting on the plane with John Goodman because she's really been an American the whole time.
Yes. Made no sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, it was a little bit cheating.
Yeah, I actually think it's a stronger movie if it ends with the final debrief.
Yeah, exactly.
So she kills Percy. He suggests that she's Satchel, and they have the final debrief where they say they're going to bury it, and they put her on leave, and roll credits. Yeah, I think that's exactly. An awesome end.
Yep. Yep, then that's a plenty good time for Under Pressure.
Yep.
Yep. And I think you're right. I think the Russian scene, that actually was some interesting, that was an interesting action scene. Nothing new. They didn't bring anything new to the game. Gave her different color hair.
Yeah, I mean, that would have, I think, played better at the beginning of the movie, but, I mean, it was not up to the level of the final action scenes.
No. Plus, it was also bright.
It was bright. It was in slow motion.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah. It was doing artsy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was more cartoony. And then the final twist, you know, that just makes it become part of the Cloverfield universe, right?
Oh, you mean when the plane got eaten by that giant monster?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That was, I was not expecting it, but it was not unwanted. That's, again, explain a lot of why they were under pressure.
Yeah.
So... I'll ask you in a second whether you thought it was worth it. I like this movie, if nothing else, because it was like, maybe it's sexist to say balls to the wall action, but it was some serious action all the way through, and it had fantastic music that spoke to me from the 80s.
Yeah, no, the music was great. The action was great. I mean, this is really like a moody kind of movie. When Lorraine is not kicking ass all over the place, it's actually kind of really dark and depressing and has like this hopeless feel about it.
Oh yeah.
So I think gritty has like a really cliched connotation nowadays. But this felt like a good version of that. I mean, this was a dirty, immersive movie. You know, really, really quite the opposite of Salt.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm glad we tacked it on this week because I mean it's really fun and it is a badass movie.
Yeah, but it's the same coin. It's just the opposite side of the coin as from Salt.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, I mean, going back to Salt, Salt is fine. Salt is a fine action movie. Salt is a fine action movie for a PG-13 crowd. This is an R-rated movie.
Yeah, this is like Salt, but taking place in the upside down. So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way.